Good evening, everyone. I'd like to welcome you to our October 25th, 2021 City Council meeting. If you'd all please rise.
This conference is no longer being recorded. This conference will now be recorded.
That's contradictory. I'd like to start with a short private invocation asking for God's blessing upon this city and wisdom for our city council as we make our decisions tonight. And now, if you'll please join me in the Pledge of Allegiance.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the Republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Amen. Mark.
And so item 1D is roll call. Maria, are you present on the meeting tonight?
Yes, I'm here. Good afternoon.
Thank you. So all council members are present. I'd like to move to item 1E, citizen input. Segment of the city council meeting where citizens have an opportunity to address the city council. Is there anyone present who would like to speak to the council tonight? Okay. Seeing none, I'll move to item 2, which is the approval of our agenda.
Make that motion.
Second.
Thank you. All those in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? Motion carried. And now we'll move to our consent agenda.
I'll make the motion to approve the consent agenda.
Second.
All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carried. As we move to our current business, we're going to start with the Tourism Fund. And the Lodging Tax Advisory Committee had a committee meeting with our city's finance officer, Spencer Williams, and he is going to give the city council the results of that meeting.
Yes, thank you very much, Mayor and Council. The city receives a hotel motel tax from the hotel industry every month. It comes from the hotels up through the state and comes back down to the city. This is a restricted revenue that the city receives, which means it can only be used for certain things. And so we receive this money into its own fund. We call it a tourism fund. These monies can only be used by organizations or for events that promote tourism within the city of Othello, that bring people from outside to the inside of the city. Every year about this time, we meet with the Lodging Tax Advisory Committee, and we discuss the available funds, and we look at the organizations that are requesting dollars, and we allocate money among the different organizations. And so there's a list up here of the organizations that have requested money this year. And the committee met, we allocated the funds, and now I present those to you for your, not necessarily your approval, but for your information. We'll later approve these when we approve the final budget later on in December. But I can just a few interesting things here. We have more money in this fund than we have in the last couple of years. Typically, we'll have maybe about $80,000 total, so about $40,000 or $50,000 to allocate. You can see last year we allocated $49,800. This year we had about $20,000 more than that to allocate, and so we took $1,100 and gave $1,100 to each one of the organizations' 2021 allocation to come up with a new allocation for the new year, with the exception of the Christmas firework display. That's a new one this year that we had discussed in previous budget meetings, that we want to explore the possibility of funding that with tourism dollars, which is certainly allowable. With that, I don't have anything more for you, and there's no action that is needed by council tonight. This is just as an FYI. If you have any questions, I can take those. And I'll punt it back to you.
Thank you, Spencer. Council? Awesome. Thank you. So now we'll move to item 4B, which is the sewer rate ordinance. And we had a committee meeting on the sewer rates, and Spencer is going to give the council some information and also go give an opportunity for the committees to talk about these this ordinance.
Yes, thank you very much. We met with the sewer committee to discuss sewer rates for the next three-year period. Our current sewer rate ordinance covers a three-year period ending with 2021. And so we need to revisit that ordinance, update the rates. And so we met with the committee, and we had quite a long discussion. We considered a bunch of different things. We looked at the needs of the sewer system for the city. We looked at other cities to get some comps to see what if we're kind of in the ballpark. We looked at the effect on citizens. And ultimately, we came to the conclusion that our rates are fine where they're at now, and a 0% increase for the next three-year period is appropriate. With that, I don't have any other comments unless you have questions, or the council members that were part of that committee, if you have some thoughts that you wanted to share, we can move to that now.
Thank you, Spencer. City Council? John, Gina, you guys were in that meeting. Mark, do you guys have any? I think the
just when we were looking at the rates, if we raised them, we're going to be way up there. We're going to be the highest sewer rate around. And right now, we're still fine just holding steady for the next 3 years. So we're still putting money away with that. So we decided that that would be good just to leave it at zero.
When you're saying that, that's who are we comparing it to? Quincy, Moses Lake? I mean,
yes.
To whose rate?
Quincy, Ephrata, Moses Lake, yeah. Other small we were second highest.
One of the things I think that we've always tried to do with our rates, whether they're sewer or water, is to kind of make sure that we're, you know, in that at least the middle of the pack, so that we're doing our due diligence, but we're not, you know, way up there. And like Mark said, you know, it would put us way the heck up there. And I think that, you know, being able to do a zero rate for the next 3 years and still remain in the middle of the pack, I think we're good.
We're not in the middle of the pack, though. Like Mark said,
yeah. High.
We are extremely high.
Well, we got
Rock Island,
you know, we're up
Rock
there.
Island
so
was the only other city in this area that was higher than us, and they're paying back capital.
But by the time we hit the end of the
3 years, yeah. So by then, 3 years staying the same, is what makes it good, because you're not going to increase
based on
it.
What our estimated budget is for the next year, 2 years, 3 years. Even in the third year, we're going to be making money at the rate that we're currently at. So there's no reason to increase it.
So
what can we do, like, for, because we have had some people concerned, you know, some concerns for Heads and Tracks. They're at $97. What can we do to kind of cushion that? I mean, are we pretty...
It's not going to go up either, but they're still outside of the city, which I think then they pay a little bit more.
What we can do is, as a council, would be to, I don't know, make a recommendation that we bring them into the city limits.
Now, yeah, because they're like $33 more.
Whether we could do that, Angel, without them petitioning to become part of the city, I don't know. I mean, I don't know what the action would be in order to incorporate them into the city limits.
And I don't know what it's going to cost us to do that, you know, to get them, you know, bring them up to par. So
there is Department of Health funding for water systems. You know, right now they're on our sewer system, and they're on our water supply system. We probably could get some grant funding from the Department of Health to help us get that under control down there. They need backflow preventers. They need meters. There's a lot of work, yes, that would be required to do that. But I think we could get some grant funding to do that. So
more police force.
Well, we've heard from the chief. The chief has actually expressed a desire to get that under control. So
the costing to incorporate them in the city, I think it would be crazy funds.
So I've had a lot of discussion, and I think, you know, there's obstacles. And one of the obstacles is the residents in there. If you're going to say, okay, if we annex, you now go from 1.5 times the city rate for your water and sewer to one same rate that the city residents pay. Okay, that's an incentive to do that. However, if there's other improvements that need to be made, eventually there's going to be a cost of those improvements, and I don't think it's fair that the city residents here pay for all the improvements that take place down there. So one of the issues we're going to have to work through, maybe we can get grant money to pay for all of it. I'm not saying we can't, but one of the issues that we're going to have going through that is, okay, yes, I annex, and okay, 3 years later, here's a bill for $4,000. Okay, per lot or per parcel. So that's why it's such a complex issue, is because before they move, they want to know what's the money going to look like. So, what's that issue? Or,
so the sewer system isn't that old. The sewer system was put in like in 1996.
No, it was a lot older than that. I was still living down there back in the 80s, 70s, 80s. Uh-uh. No?
Nope.
Or mid-80s?
Nope. It was in the 90s.
Or was that the water?
It was in the 90s.
It was when they paved it, they did all that. It's been paved for a long time.
The 90s.
90s?
Yep. Okay. Yep. It was done in the 90s. We can find out. I mean, we can.
But I guess the thing is does it make sense? You know, in the long run, I think it makes sense. It is going to be the growth boundary. It is within the growth boundary of the city. It is in the path of progress of the city. We're eventually going to have development down there and beyond towards the west. So the long answer is yes. It's then convincing people who live in these particular areas, do they want to annex?
And okay, so I know the county gets the biggest portion of our taxes here in town, right? They get like, what, 60-something percent?
I don't know what the breakdown
stays
is
in town. Mm-hmm. So are we getting anything from Eds and Tracks?
The city works out to about, I think it's like $300 per 100,000, right?
We get about $3.14 per 1,000.
So because there you go. If we're not getting anything right now, and then we annex it in, then part of that money comes over here.
That won't even.
There's a lot of houses out there.
The money you're going to get from taxes will not even cover place coverage down there.
Okay, I did a calculation here about 2 or 3 years ago. We would, our portion of the tax revenue, we would get about $50,000 a year.
How much?
$50,000.
That won't even pay for one police officer.
Yeah. Well, we're half the property. I'm talking about property tax. Half the property tax goes to the state, and then you have the schools, and then our split. That's all we would get out of that.
And one of the big questions would be: would they vote to come into the city? Because a lot of them, I know that there are a portion of them that like living outside of the city, and they don't have the rules that you. The codes and the ordinances that we have.
All I did was answer your question, Angel. How do you make it better for them? And that's how you make it better.
Right, and I think,
and that's going to be an issue.
I see $30-something bucks You know, and I see you got the guy that's reading the meters. I see 30-some bucks that they're getting to just to go through the books. That's it. That's all they're doing because somebody else is doing the book work, right?
Right now.
Because I used to pay the water over there. So they got one, I don't know, I think they got one person running the books and probably one meter reader. So at 33 bucks, you kind of times that by whatever's out there. But it's got to get done, I mean, because we're not going to go out there.
Yeah, we read one meter. Yeah. And so we would have to go in. Yeah, there's a lot that would have to be done. I don't want to go any further in this discussion because we got other items on the agenda. What we have before, what we need to do, since I don't want to sit here and just leave it at that. I think the next conversation needs to be in the Water Sewer Street Committee. And we'll have a discussion. We'll have a further discussion because that's some of the first things we're going to have to begin to tackle. And then we're going to have to identify what kind of grant money is available, and we just have to have a plan. But I think we do need to, I think the long term of Othello is eventually to incorporate all that area. So now, before us, though, on the council meeting tonight, we have this proposed sewer rate ordinance.
I'll make motion to adopt the ordinance.
Second. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carried. Thank you, council.
Thank you.
Thank you, Spencer. And now I've moved to item 4C, which is the Public Works Design Standard Revisions.
Make a motion.
We probably should hear about them first.
You want to move along, I'll get you moving along.
Good. We'll try to stay on topic here. Public Works Design Standards were brought to you back in, I think, April. And at that time, they were adopted, but we were still discussing residential street width. We eventually, council approved to go from a 40-foot road to a 36-foot wide road, but that was not has not been included into our actual public works design standards at this time yet. So that's what we've brought forward to you. And then just some little minor cleanup items also. So I can answer any questions if you have them.
Any questions? Okay, and entertain that motion that Sean was, or that John was in, starting to initiate.
I'll make a motion that we accept these changes to the design standards, public works design standards.
Thank you. All those in favor say aye.
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 Opposed? Motion carried. I'd like to move to item 4D is an introduction to assisted living in a C1 zone. And Henning, our community development director, has some information for the council tonight.
Thank you. So this is just an introduction tonight, so kind of informal, if you have thoughts you want to share. We've been approached by some people looking to possibly purchase a CDHA building and convert it to assisted living. And so the code is in C1 zone, code doesn't allow that. I asked them if they had considered doing any portions of the building as commercial, and they thought that was a good idea. There are services that often are provided at an assisted living facility, coffee shop, beauty shop, nail salon, that sort of thing, that could also serve the public. And so they were interested in that idea. So I discussed this with the Planning Commission this past week, and the Planning Commission was in favor. So we're moving through the process. I looked at the building with the proponents on Thursday, and they do need to have, the rooms have to have windows. So all the resident rooms would need to have windows, and so they would need to use the outsides of the building for the most part for resident rooms, which leaves, it's hard to say how big of an area, but the middle door on Main Street, that area behind that would be the area that they would propose as commercial. Then there would be assisted living kind of around the edges and on the other floors. So that would be kind of their, you know, at a rough idea what they would be proposing. And it's kind of tricky to figure out how to write the code to make that work, or, you know, how to fit that proposal, because as you know, the CDHA building is on a slope. And so it's not easy to say, I mean, you could just say, so the residential multifamily says you can have ground floor commercial with residential, you know, above, behind, whatever, but it's harder when it's not just a level site. So I guess I'd be interested in the thoughts of the council, if you wanted to share those. Otherwise, we can just proceed to go through the process and hold public hearings.
I kind of thought when I was reading this that because it's such a unique space and what it was used for previously, that rather than changing all of the ordinance to accommodate this particular request or desire, could we do some sort of a variance based on a preliminary plan from the owners? I mean, what if we saw something and, you know, that was developed in the form that you're saying, that we could, you know, swing this as a variance to the zoning that it currently is right now?
So the only variances in the code are standards like setbacks, height, things like that. You can't do a variance to the use. So I don't see a way to do it other than to craft the code kind of specific to the site.
Do a spot zone?
Yeah, I was going to just say give it its own zone. Create a zone for it.
It would fit in a C2 zone, wouldn't it?
Yes.
Rezone at C2.
Might as well share with the rest of us. What's the score, Sean? Oh, okay.
So I had a conversation with Ann about this afternoon. So what you have is a piece of property in the middle of the city of Othello that doesn't generate any tax revenue, hasn't been, there's no commercial, there's no jobs being created out of it, there's no, really it's just not a going concern, it's just a vacant piece of property, and it's in the downtown area, and so obviously that would generate interest from, you know, the mayor and the staff as to, okay, tell me more, what do you guys want to do? Do you want to, you know, and so obviously before any of this could go forward, I think CBHA is asking for $2.5 million for this piece of property, and the new potential investors would need some form of assurances that the city, that they don't buy the property, and then the city says no to what they want to do. Okay, so from a legal standpoint, I want to ask Kelly, I mean, isn't that a normal course of events when people come to purchase property within a city and they're going to spend a substantial amount, don't they want some assurances? And
yeah, I mean, that's pretty normal for somebody making a, you know, a large commercial expense like that. Yeah, and there's a number of different options that we could do. I mean, I don't know, it'd be nice to know where they're at on their due diligence period in the transaction, how much when anticipated closing is, how much CBHA is willing to work with them. But there are a number of things that the city could do to the code to allow for this type of use, if that's what the council is thinking. Of course, it would be a planning commission topic, I believe, before it came to council. But there are certainly things we can do to the code to streamline this. You know, and I would try to stay away from spot zoning because sometimes that is subject to challenge. But you certainly could add a change the variance provisions of the code to allow a person who wants to pursue a project to apply for a variance in this situation in a C1 zone. Mm-hmm. For other uses that are allowed in other zones, you know, provided certain conditions are met.
So what do you think of the idea of us just rezoning it to a C2 zone?
Well, I have to know more about the surrounding areas to see how it fits in, because that's particularly when you get in trouble with spot zoning, is you got to see how the character it is out of the surrounding area. Anne would probably know more about that. Well, she would know more about than I, but.
I don't know exactly where the zoning line is. You know, if it butts up against C2, then that's a pretty easy fix to, you know, just extend the C2 one more block to include it. But if there's, if you're just making one spot of C2 in the middle of C1, then that's not.
Well, I guess my concern only is that I don't want to see, if we do allow or change our zone, our code to allow it in a C1, I don't want to see Main Street filled with assisted living facilities up and down our commercial area. But again, it kind of goes back to the property is sitting vacant and it isn't generating any revenue for the city. And I understand Chris Doro has something he wants to say. So maybe, do you have a comment, Chris?
We do. Chris Doro, Otho Planning Commission Chair. It became evident to us when we reviewed this that we were way too restrictive in one of our definitions. And it's something that we're looking at changing in our code for C1. What we did in C1 is we allowed for multi-level buildings to be built there. You could build up to a four-story building, and the bottom floor or the ground floor or the street level floor had to be commercial. And we allowed for multi-family dwellings to be built above that. And unfortunately, that's the only thing we allowed. So we, I mean, it's the only thing we saw is coming. We didn't see this. Had we seen this with the amount of parking available that's there and the ordinances that are already in place, this would actually fit really well and probably should have been considered as an option. But until somebody puts that option in front of you, you don't really see the opportunity for it. This is very initial, obviously, but when we discussed this, we felt as though the criteria intended for C1 was met by what is being intended, and that we should change C1 to allow additional levels to have assisted living facilities. I suspect we're going to probably have a few more opportunities as entrepreneurs come up with great ideas to use available space. So I think that's an area that we kind of, we thought we were doing the right thing, and you don't find these things out until afterwards. Mm-hmm. But by definition, this probably meets the criteria of what's already intended in C1.
Thank you. So this was informational, correct?
Yep.
Is there any questions, council, you have, or any statements?
I have a statement.
Yeah.
So I honestly, I wouldn't have an issue with doing assisted living there. But I didn't like the way this was presented. This was basically presented the same way that we ended up with the Big Red Barn. They wanted to do something there that wasn't in the zoning, so they said, "Well, we'll put a drive-through coffee stand in there," and that's what we ended up with. I'd rather them just come through and say, "Look, we want to do assisted living. You know, if something else in there happens in there, cool. If not, you know, we'll put
a requirement in there." Or put a requirement. If you want to put a carport up on your house, you got to replace the sidewalks in front of your house.
Right.
No ifs, ands, or buts. So, I mean,
but see, the requirement, that's how they got it past Travis. There was a requirement there. They said, yeah, we'll do it if that's what we have to do, and it just never happened.
But so, I do agree with Chris in that I think that this meets kind of the intention of the commercial on the ground floor or in public access area, and then the living space above.
But that was an afterthought. That was an afterthought. Well, yeah, we can do that if that's what we have to do. That's the way I read it into it. Anyway, that was all. I just want somebody to be honest. I mean, if you want something, be honest about it and don't.
So I guess I'll just say that was my idea that I presented to them because I thought that was a better way to use that building. That came from me.
Okay.
And I do agree with the mayor that, you know, we're not hurting, but I don't think we're in a position to chase away investors or entrepreneurs in business from downtown Othello. And I do think that, I mean, I think it's a great idea. I think assisted living is going to be a more needed business here in town as we grow. So, but I do agree with Corey. We can maybe find a happy medium with these guys and maybe get a little bit more bang for the buck as far as business goes.
Well, I would say that, you know, personally, I would not want to see just assisted living in our prime commercial and retail areas. But this makes sense where you could have a restaurant or a hair salon or coffee shop or what on the main floor so that the public does get some commercial and retail area. And then you could have the assisted living above that. And you see that in a lot of towns now. Even, you know, just apartments they do that with. And I think that would be a good way of blending it in the downtown area.
So would the living area be allowed in the downtown, I mean, on the lower floor? Or that would have to be a commercial? Because honestly, I'd rather see an assisted living area there than an apartment there, than a multifamily housing there.
When we looked at the building, I can't remember if I said this, the middle door on Main Street, that area behind that would be the commercial area because they can't use it for their assisted living because there's no windows. It's interior space. They would want to keep the easternmost door, and then as assisted living, have some rooms off of there. And then if you're on Main Street, there's like a little, like a ramp up to the other side. Mm-hmm. That also they would use for assisted living. But I don't know if you can remember having been in that building before. It's set up to be a clinic. There's lots of little rooms, but the restriction on the sale is it can't be used for any sort of health care at all. Anything that would compete with CBHA is not allowed.
Yeah.
So then you have this building that's, you know, not useful for much. It'd be perfect for a clinic, but you can't use it for that or even medical offices.
So, if we allowed and changed our ordinance, then wouldn't any building then in a C1 zone be able to be converted to a assisted living?
It depends on how you word it, but potentially.
I don't like that. No, I don't like that idea.
There's got to be an avenue if we're going to consider this for this particular location. There's got to be some sort of conditional use that can be associated with this property. That goes outside of the zoning.
What's the danger, Kelly, on spot zoning? You mentioned potential challenges. What are those challenges potentially?
Well, it can be an improper use of, you know, city authority, legislative authority. Spot zoning has been held unconstitutional, in violation of rights. So that's an issue.
I'm sorry, I didn't hear. It's a violation.
Spot zoning, when it's challenged and the challenges prevail, it's an unauthorized illegal use of the city's police power. They call it police power, which isn't necessarily law enforcement.
Yeah.
And so that's primarily the issue with spot zoning. I haven't ran into a spot zoning issue for several years, so I don't remember all the ins and outs of it. But I do know that, you know, you want to take a look at the character of what's around it to determine whether or not you're getting into an impermissible spot zoning issue. There are other ways to deal with it, though. You can have a procedure for requesting a variance for this type of use or a conditional use permit for this type of use in the C1 zones. And then if you put, you can attach all kinds of parameters around the city's ability to authorize that conditional use permit, making sure the conditions that the city wants to be in place are, you know, to allow that assisted living use or any other similar type of use, you can ensure that those are in place before the city would be even allowed to grant that that use for that property. So that's how you build in some assurance, like, you know, your concern, Mayor, that, you know, you don't want every building in Othello in a C1 zone to have the capability of having an assisted living facility. Well, you can draft it such that not every building in the C1 zone would even have the capability of meeting that. And in the off chance that everybody was able or was motivated enough and did change their buildings to meet that, you'd have conditions in place that still maintain the character of the C1 zones that you want while allowing for this other use if there is that kind of demand there.
Well, wait a second. If we change the C1 zoning, would we not just change the wording so that it would be commercial on the bottom and it could be assisted living or residence above? It would still be, it would still have to be commercial on the bottom.
That's what I was proposing.
Living above. Mm-hmm. It wouldn't be just any building could be assisted living. It'd have to be above a commercial or retail space.
Above or behind or something. Okay. Yeah.
So what we say, the condition you'd put
yeah.
in there is that, you know, so it'd have to be a two-story building or have to have these certain yes. characteristics. And this is how you could use it. You know, that's
can all be hardwired. I would be more interested in that. I wouldn't want just any building to be just assisted living in a downtown or a retail space. But having something that could be commercial or retail on the lower level with a living space, whether it's residence or assisted mm-hmm. living or whatever we decide above, that makes more sense.
And the residential, that's already allowed. That's already yes. written into the code.
So we'd just be adjusting that little condition to allow a little bit greater expanded living definition, correct?
Probably. So there's a line in the code right now for mm-hmm. specific to assisted living. And so it could have a footnote similar to what the multifamily has.
Okay.
Angel, you had a comment?
No.
Well, okay, so when the Planning Commission came and reviewed our zoning 35 times, and the City Council made its decision about zoning, I remember the comments that we were trying to protect our downtown and our commercial C1 areas from different types. I mean, there were things we wanted to allow, and that's what we put in the code, and there were things that we weren't. So I'm not trying to kill the project. I don't want to kill the project. But what I want to do is, from everything that I've heard tonight, came the best idea I like is for Ann in her comment, and she said, well, it's contiguous to a C2 zone. Why don't we just rezone that particular property to C2, and then we don't run into other areas of the downtown and the commercial area becoming assisted living facilities? Because that's...
That goes against...
She said if it was contiguous.
Is it contiguous?
It's not.
We're going to follow them up.
There's a map, the zoning map, that in the next... And it's not continuous. It's continuous with C1. C3 sits next to it, and then C2. I mean, if anything, you'd make it a C3, and that's pretty much anything.
What's red?
The C1.
Red. So right. The pink is a C1, the darker pink is C2, and the red is
C3.
Well, then what's... isn't...
C2 is...
Oh, that's First Avenue. Okay. Oh. Does it have to be contiguous to rezone it? I mean, I thought people
really
could...
It looks like a spot zone if you have one little piece in the middle of, surrounded by...
It's not that big a town here, so I don't know.
Talk to Kelly more about it then, Sean. we don't have to make a decision right now tonight.
No.
Let's look at some more options.
It's something we'd have to look, based on that map, that's something we'd have to look in. I'd have to look into from a legal standpoint more carefully to give you assurance that you're not running into a spot zone issue. But it's not exactly contiguous, so it does cause some concern. It's close.
What's the dark brown?
That's green.
Or green, then.
That's a residential.
Yeah, what?
R4.
Residential, R3.
R4.
Is that R4?
Yeah.
You can't see the legend. It's up on.
Are they allowed in an R4?
Are we looking for an R2 or an R3 here? I mean, C2 or C3?
Either one would allow assisted living.
Because if we stretch at the C3, you know, to the east of First, and just make a strip, that wouldn't be spot zoning. See that? We just go across First, that'll get us into the clinic area. So now you're not spot zoning, you're not in a dead center. Now you just stretch out a little leg towards that way. If you go down on the map, go down the other way, sorry, the other way, you see like right there on top how it stretches out to the right? We do the same thing and include that little area, which is a barbershop that's there, I think, where the water district used to be for Eds and Tracks. So if you bring a strip all the way through, that wouldn't be spot zoning, would it?
No, probably not.
I say we send it back to planning and to Ann and let them bring the best fit.
Yeah, I think we say, yeah, I think the answer is we don't want to kill the project, I think. Right, council?
Yes.
We want to pursue a way to say yes.
Yep.
So whatever, you know, we all, I guess, have all our own ideas of how we should do this, but let's... I think we need to communicate with Kelly and with the Planning Commission and have them bring that up. You guys discussed it briefly, wasn't it?
We talked about it quite a bit. Like you said, you know, the fact that they have quite a bit committed to commercial on the street level side, it seemed consistent with the intent. We just didn't have that as an allowed use in C1. We didn't see this coming.
Yeah.
I mean, we've seen it coming. You know, the same thing. Somebody could come someday and want to build a three-story office building. Well, that might also have some. There might be some challenges in how that's done that we're going to have to review and have commitments to percentage to commercial in that area. I mean, there's, unfortunately, the easiest thing that we could see coming was the European design of commercial on the bottom and residential above. We just didn't think the assisted living center was one of those opportunities, but I think it's consistent with intent. We just didn't see that intent.
Okay. But yeah, I agree.
You have a lot of parking that is available there, which is not consistent with the rest of that zone. So it has a unique opportunity there already built into it that probably allows this and to still maintain a C1 zone.
Okay. So I think, Ann, you have your direction. And thank you for this lively discussion. So now let's move to another lively discussion. We're going to go to item 4E, which is a public hearing on accessory dwelling units, which I'll open at 7:13 p.m. And we'll start with a staff report from our community development director, Ann Henning.
Thank you. So here we are, the public hearing for accessory dwelling units. I don't know that I'll present a lot. I've been over this a number of times. Planning Commission has created, they've updated their proposal, which I presented to you last time, so it's not a change since last time, but they have done an update proposing it to the council to consider. Accessory dwelling units would be proposed to be allowed in R2, R3, and R4. A lot of parking. I know we talked about last meeting, we talked about the alleys, and there wasn't a lot of support for that, but I didn't want to make any changes based on just discussion. I wanted to leave the Planning Commission's recommendation the way they made it, and then you could make all your changes to that at once. As provided, there was discussion last time about how many families there are, households, the size of households, and then the size of the dwelling units available. So I provided the graphic that was in our housing needs assessment that was done for us, showing the, you know, 18% single person households, 23% two people households. So that's 41% one or two people households, where we have 2% studio apartments and 9% one bedroom houses. I think that's all I'm going to say. I'll just let's have the public hearing and then discuss.
Thank you, Ann. At this time, I'll open up the public comment portion of this public hearing. Anyone who'd like to give testimony with regard to accessory dwelling units tonight, please raise your hand. We'll go one by one. Chris, Doral, please state your name and address for the record.
Chris Doral, 850 East Hemlock. I've addressed you guys in a lot of different hats on, and I'd like to do it personally as a member of the public. I was afraid tonight that there wouldn't be a great turnout, and I know this is what you were hoping for. But I want to talk a little bit about my evolution on ADUs and opinions. I started completely against ADUs. I know a lot about the history about them and what you all have gone through trying to address them and dealing with them. And as such, I had a pretty negative opinion at the start. As I learned more and more, as I looked at the type of code, the type of buildings, I ended up having to answer a question to myself, is would this be something that if it was built next to me, could be done in a way that I would be okay with? What would it need to accomplish those things? Have we put together policy in place to give the best opportunity so it doesn't have impacts on neighborhoods that would be negative? So those were some of the concerns. And as I got farther and farther into the nuts and bolts of it, I then found myself asking a different question. How can I tell a family who wants to build a separate dwelling for their family to use, whether it be for their parents to have a separate place to live but still be under their care, or whether somebody who lives in, somebody who has adult children and wants to keep them close but not in the same place and gives them some freedom and opportunity, or even somebody who wants to use their personal property themselves as a little extra income? I couldn't find a good reason to say no at the end of it. I started as a complete no. I'm ended as very positive for this being a good thing for the community and a good opportunity for the community to have. Thank you.
Thank you. Anyone else? Okay. Hearing none, I'll move to close the public testimony. And council, you're free to ask any additional information of staff.
Did we decide on the 1763030 paragraph E fee for the maintenance in the alley? It's still blank. I know we had discussed the no fee.
Is that the amount charged?
Yeah. If parking spaces are accessed from the alley, an annual assessment for alley maintenance is required in the amount of blank.
And so I didn't propose anything because I know it was discussed that some people thought that should be removed. So it's open for discussion.
Anybody proposing anything about the alley maintenance fee?
I think it should be there because if they're doing wear and tear on the alley, it is going to need to be maintained.
Yeah, then we gravel it even on that.
Yeah.
You're gonna lose it.
So here's the deal. The ADUs, if they're using parking, they're gonna be using the alleys. However, houses, regular houses are also using the alleys. How is it fair and equitable to be charging ADUs, which I'm opposed to ADUs anyways, and we'll get to that later.
Well, but Being a homeowner that's on an alley, and I use, we do use the alley, and we have our hunting truck in the back, in the inside our gate. But we only use it a few times a, you know, technically a few times a year, like on a weekend and during the hunting season. And you know, we don't use it on a regular basis. We're not in and out and in and out and in and out. Whereas if you're going to have an apartment or an ADU, it's going to be a daily wear and tear.
Yeah,
right.
And some people don't use the school system and still have to pay the tax.
Right.
I mean, yeah. Some people don't drive and still have to pay the tax. And
I agree with you. You're right. And actually, the last thing I was going to say, because at the last meeting we had about this, I said I'd drop it. I would drop this in consideration of something else. But you're right. The majority of people don't use the alley on a daily basis. But there is a lot of people that do. Mm-hmm. And I just don't understand the fairness of charging them but not charging them for doing the exact same thing. But I'm not going to, that's not a point I'm going to argue. I just want to make that point. My argument comes to the zoning. And when we get done with this one, we can move on to zoning.
My recommendation is if there's going to be excess use and the city does find that there's going to be an excess cost, that the permit for the accessory dwelling unit needs to reflect that excess cost, because those permits aren't lifelong. They're yearly or one time.
It would be one time.
They're not even going to be close to covering it, because if there's only one dwelling back there, you know, between streets, well, I don't know what price you're going to put on it. It's not going to cover anything to compare the maintenance.
So the rentals don't have to have a permit renewed yearly?
There is a rental license inspection permit, annual fee of $10, yes.
Yeah, and so that permit that they would have to rent that out should reflect that for the ADU.
What about, so I've approved several triplexes lately that have parking on the alley.
Yeah.
Oh, I think.
On 4th Avenue, Roger Ends, the Seahawk.
Yeah.
Fourplex, sixplex, or whatever.
That's right.
They all enter from the alley on one side, the road on the other side. But, you know,
they have, is it 6 or 12? I think it's, I can't remember if it's 6 or 12.
It's a concrete pad.
Right, but so, yeah, so they do have 6 or 12 spots back there that those cars are all using in the alley, but they're not going to have to pay that fee to where an ADU owner, what's the difference? That's what I'm getting.
I don't think it's fair to charge an ADU.
That's what I was getting at.
I think we need to strike E from the E needs to be stricken.
Out.
Yeah.
I agree.
So
you're gonna pay for it.
The question I have about
I mean the amount of ADUs, I mean, what are we gonna charge? $50? So let's get 20 ADUs. That isn't gonna maintain our
gravel.
All right. So I think the city council is saying we're gonna strike that. Let's move on to other issues about the ordinance.
An explanation of the last one, 1763050. Just explain it to me, Ann. How are we going to work this?
So that is, so we already have in the nonconforming use chapter, we have a statement that if it was if a residential use was in existence as of 2016, it can continue. And so we're having to accommodate that somehow here. And so that was the attempt to craft some language that addressed that kind of unique.
So they have to be brought up to code.
Yeah, but it doesn't really say that.
It says they have to be brought up to safety standards, right?
Right.
Yeah.
Or life safety standards.
So that's things like egress windows, heating, plumbing, some of the things that were also now also addressed in the rental licensing ordinance that was passed since this was done.
It's not accessory dwelling units, but it goes hand in hand. Where are we at with, since we've passed that ordinance for rental licensing to give our code enforcement a doorway into these homes, or facilities to get them up to code? Where are we at percentage-wise roughly, or is that even known, like 50% of the trouble units?
No, it's not 50.
So, are we less than 50?
Yes.
I mean, so what are we looking at, a 5-10-year time frame before we can address the non-conforming ADUs as well?
In my monthly department report, I have been including numbers of, you know, how many have been issued, how many have been inspected. So yeah. I don't know that off the top of my head.
Yeah, and I didn't pull up your last one. I could pull it up and look. I think we're going to have to put a bigger force on the ground to inspect these units and get them up to speed, or...
I think it's mainly the...
That we're never going to get to them in time.
I think the biggest problem is identifying them.
Chief, you have some comment?
Thank you, Mayor. Part of the problem, Councilman Hertzman, deal with that, the current non-conforming use versus ADUs. The new ADUs will be built to code. But the non-conforming use, most of those aren't to code and can't be built or brought to code. So this was a compromise to go to life safety standards. So egress windows, you know, I mean, the normal things we would expect. In the previous ordinances, we have no mechanism to go after those other than abatement. This gives us a way to actually start addressing them, where currently there is no way other than demolishing them. So I don't know what the count is. Tim and Heather have been, I think they're over 100 and some that they've done already of the rental inspections. They've done a lot.
On the non-conforming, sorry.
No.
Just rental.
There's no good for us to do an inspection on a non-conforming. There's nothing we can suggest that's going to bring it to code. The rental license allows us to go in and search the life safety on those, but they may still be non-code if they were a non-conforming use when they were built. This ordinance would actually allow those to be allowed. But right now, we would, even though they may have got a rental permit, they're still not in compliance with building codes. They still don't have a building permit to become into existence. So the only way to resolve this last paragraph without this is to demolish them.
So it's in lieu of abatement and giving the property owner the last ditch effort a chance to bring this up to speed and continue on making money.
Instead of just postponing this and postponing this, which we've been doing for, I'm aware of, 6 or 7 years.
Okay.
It's creating a policy.
This gives us a good start, something we can deal with, and I would not suggest more boots on the ground. We're just getting started with this.
Okay.
I have a question for Kelly on that. Mm-hmm. So on these non-conforming housing units, if the city's given them, basically given these people a license to rent those, and somebody gets hurt in one of those, can the city be held liable for that person getting hurt because that building's not up to code, yet the city gave them a license to rent it?
I'd say no. I'd say that most likely be encompassed by the public duty doctrine. Okay. Would be what I would, you know, it's the same situation when maybe a building inspector approves, you know, says something's up to code and maybe it's not. It's the same situation.
Yeah.
So duty to one is a duty to all. So you can't do that. So I would say no. But certainly someone could look at it. I just don't actually remember the ins and outs of the rental license ordinance that we've been.
All of the things in there are things that come out of the landlord-tenant law.
Right. Yeah. Okay. Yeah, but I don't believe that would make the city liable. Okay.
The other thing we talked about in the last meeting was the height of the accessory dwelling unit. And I looked in our ordinance. Somebody had mentioned that they thought that you couldn't build an outbuilding or accessory building on your property that was taller than your primary residence, and I could not find that. Does that exist?
I believe it's 20 feet.
20 feet maximum height for the accessory?
Building could not be more than 20 feet.
20 feet tall.
But that's like a garage, a shop. This, the accessory dwelling unit would have its own height standards.
So if that accessory dwelling unit was above a garage, then that 20-foot standard would come into play.
Yeah.
Or no.
And I know that it was discussed that it should be allowed to, when the Planning Commission discussed it, they wanted to allow accessory dwelling units above garages.
They wanted to? Mm-hmm. I'm sorry, my ears are plugged tonight, so. Okay. Are we going to address that in the ordinance as well then?
We should.
So is that going to be an add-on?
Yeah, it would be additional.
Okay.
Put it in place of E. There's a spot opening in E.
Oh, yeah.
So in the development standards, we could add it. We have item, what is it? E is removed. We could replace item E with, what were you saying, Councilman Erickson?
The height restrictions that would be conforming with additional or accessory buildings.
So you want to limit the height to 20 feet?
Well, yeah, so we're restricting the living area to 900 square foot, right?
Yes.
So, I mean, the height doesn't really matter as long as the living area doesn't exceed the 900 square foot, which would be the governing rule there. So if you want to park classic cars underneath from all the money you're making in rental income, then you can do that.
Okay. Is there other issues or comments people want to bring up?
The zoning.
Okay.
So the at the last meeting, we sat here and we went around the table here, and nobody wanted to, I believe it was nobody or almost everybody, wanted to say no to the R2 zones. I want to kind of contradict something that Mr. Goro said, that it doesn't affect the neighbors at all. Well, it does. And the biggest effect is living. Well, the biggest effect is property values. I mean, bar none, you have an ADU, your property values are going to lower. We have a realtor that has already basically said that's what happens. You know, and it just, R2s, I was 100% against ADUs, period. No ifs, ands, or buts about it. I backed off, and I'm okay in 3 and 4 with the size limits and a few other things, but I'm totally out on R2s. I just am.
I'm not against R2 if it has the owner occupancy.
But we've talked about that. I don't believe owner occupancy is enforceable. I just don't.
Well, if they do it the way they talked about in here, with the 1 year certificate with the certificate of occupancy, I believe it's not an issue.
Yeah, I'm out on R2s.
And I'm also, there was a point that was made to me that if you're going to do it in R3 and R4, you're talking about not allow it in R2. You're talking about R2 is 85% of the town. So you're going to say 85% of the town.
Then let's do it in R1s. If we're going to do it in everything else, let's do it in R1s.
I don't agree with you. I think that R2.
Why not?
With the owner occupancy.
Why are we going to allow it in R2 but not allow it in R1s?
You would be allowing it in R3 and R4 fully, and then in R2 with owner occupancy. So it's not quite the same.
If you're going to allow it in R2, 3, and 4, then allow it in R1s. Why are we going to protect a very small portion of the town, but yet everybody else, it's like your property values, don't care. You know, don't care if you're living in this.
I don't think this is going to affect your property values. And
absolutely,
also,
it will.
I also don't think, you know, you talk about the density issues in R2. Well, the density issues are going to be there whether you allow them to build ADUs or they move their family into the house.
So I think all these ADUs, you know, in the old part of town, well, our town in general, we have alleys, right? So they're good. I mean, you can drive into the alley like we've been talking about. But new developments now, if we're going to go with the 6,600 square foot lots with no alleys, that's going to change everything. So I don't see any ADUs in R2 in new developments. Now, on the old side of town, I mean, you got R2 and you got some huge lots. That's going to happen. So I don't see it a problem. I really don't.
Do we see a problem with putting them in R1 if we're gonna allow them? Let's just allow them. I was like Commissioner Doro. I was totally against accessory dwelling units, and I can't say that I've completely changed my mind, but I think that the Planning Commission and the Planning Department, Ms. Henning, have done a great job changing that ordinance up to at least maybe get me to open my eyes or open up a little bit more to it. But I think there's still a lot of challenges. Councilman Everett brings up some good challenges, enforcement. But then the flip side to that is, you know, we've got to start somewhere. And maybe modify this ordinance as we move forward as those challenges present themselves or don't present themselves. So I think the open-minded approach to this that I've chosen to take has me sitting right on the dang fence where I was before. And I just don't know what's going to get me to fall off one side or the other at this point.
I was totally against it. But, you know, with the need here in town, and once again, with the bigger lots, if we can do it with a 900-square-foot home, that just helps, you know, cushion the rental part of it here in town. And it is needed. So
can I have, Mr. Gentry?
Sure.
Is an ADU going to affect the property value of the neighborhood homes?
It depends.
Obviously, the ADU is going to increase the owner of it. It's going to increase their property values. But
if parking is in the current property, is you actually parking?
So, could I follow that up, Commissioner Gentry? You know, part of selling a home is when a willing buyer and a willing seller come together and they meet on a price, and that has some bearing on the appraiser's valuation of the property. And so if that willing buyer is looking for a better deal because of an accessory dwelling unit on both sides of a certain property, said property, and that accessory dwelling unit is 900 square foot and maybe has lower income families that might not have the nicer lawns or might have challenges with maybe junk cars, old lawnmowers, things that aren't allowed, but they do exist. That could potentially affect that said property's value because of the willingness to come to an agreement on an asking price, right? I would.
Yeah.
Yeah. Fair enough, sir. Sorry to put you on the spot. You're sitting there nice and quiet.
Chris Doro, you had a comment. Chris, you got a comment?
I did. I'm sorry. A whole bunch. First off, my affecting the neighborhood thing, I wouldn't have made that as a comment, as more of an intention, because I certainly wouldn't come before you
and start quoting stuff that I didn't have data to support. So that comment was when we were looking to build something. We were looking to build something to put the best code in place so it wouldn't have impacts on your neighbors. That was the intent. Now, if we're going to talk about costs and impacts, I most definitely wouldn't bring that forward without data to support it. But I go further as to why R2 versus R1. What was the Planning Commission's thought on that? And that I can't explain. R1 is the lowest density housing zone in residences. That's why it wasn't put in there. It's because of densities. R2 uses multi-family dwellings. It allows duplexes. That's why it seemed like a simple fit from keeping a consistent density profile within the city. Now, where the owner occupancy becomes important and why we found that important is what we were very concerned with making quality buildings that are safe and that are something that don't impact everyone around them. But also, we want to make sure we didn't inadvertently create residential subdivisions. And that's where owner occupancy is helpful at the beginning. Somebody who owns 60 houses could throw 60 ADUs in the back of them, not with a one-year owner occupancy rule. That is going to be pretty tough to pull off. It's going to be the unique situation that somebody living in a house who lives there builds a building for their use.
But in 10 years, they could potentially have 10 ADU units and 10 different income properties.
They would have to build a house and move and move and move and move. Which I just don't see very many people.
Builders do. Owner builders do this all the time.
Sure.
Absolutely. Sure. And that's how they get their starts before they start
without developing. Without a doubt. And maybe that needs to be longer, but we just seen that as a really unlikely circumstance to prevent the creation of a residential subdivision. And so is the best way to give people the most autonomy to add it in areas that it's already allowed.
Thank you, Chris.
Thank you.
So the R1 units that we have today, the zoning R1, do they have, homeowners associations? Do they have covenants that prohibit the building of additional?
It all depends what you put on it.
Well, what is Palos Verdes?
The developer can.
What does Palos Verdes have?
You can't have no ADUs.
All right, so that's already ruling out one.
So
R11.
You can't have not even a family member back.
Why did you put that in your covenants when you sold those?
You know, we wanted to kind of maintain high class development to where. You know, even the color, you can only paint the household color. You can't have a Seahawk color or a pink or black.
So when you built that, you believe that an ADU would bring down the value of that area, correct? That's what you just said.
Well, you know, you can look at it many ways, Corey. Okay, so
but the fact is that's why you put that in there.
Well, just because when you have HOAs, You want to hold a certain standard, you know what I mean? You want a nice development.
That's exactly what I'm saying. You want to hold that standard of the higher value homes.
Exactly.
So you allow ADUs to be put into every house in town here, except hold on.
Okay.
If you allow ADUs to be put into every other area in town or any area in town, you're bringing the value of that area down. That's what you just said. That's why you don't allow them in Palos Verdes.
I don't think that's the case. I think that, like Chris said, the reason you're not going to allow them in R1 is because of the density. You're not allowing duplexes or triplexes or apartments in R1. In R2, you don't allow apartments or some of the higher density units, but you do allow duplexes, which is why the ADUs.
Okay, first of all, duplexes and ADUs are two completely different animals. They drive around town and look at every duplex and look at ADU. I see them on a daily basis.
They are different animals, but it's still a higher density.
Okay, so we'll take, density off the table. Let's take valuation of the property. And he just said that you didn't allow ADUs.
I said yes or no. Let me answer that. Okay, so if you have 10 lots or 8 lots between blocks, and you have one ADU or two, I don't think the value will go down. Just because, for example, the guy that's going to sell the house with the ADU in the back, if I'm buying a house and I'm looking at it, and it says, well, we have a 900-square-foot home in the back that you can, is it in good shape? Yeah. Well, I'm going to take it. You know why? Because I can rent that, get $1,000 out of it, and help cushion my payment. So it's not going to affect that buyer. You know, if you got
absolutely
one or two, your neighbors, correct. Now your neighbors, I don't think it'll affect them either if it's going to be one or two. Now, if you're going to go, you know, a ADU all across, you know, the back, and then I think it will, because you're going to have a lot of traffic.
Let me ask you a straight up question. Have you ever driven around this town and looked at the ADUs in this town? Has anybody yet?
Those are non-conforming uses.
No.
Those are not conforming uses.
Some of those
ADUs
are not allowed. There is some ADUs in this town that would comply with being built to code.
I got a question.
He's right.
We have a real estate expert in here who's knowledgeable and I would consider a very big wealth of knowledge and sits on the Planning Commission. Can I put you on the spot? What are your thoughts? I'm looking to get pushed off the fence, Commissioner. What are your thoughts on property values? What are your thoughts on real estate markets? What are your thoughts on the market and demographic for the buyers that would be looking, like Councilman Garza said, for that additional rental income versus the values that would be impacted by surrounding, like we talked about? What are your thoughts?
Let me make a statement before Mr. Gentry makes his. So I'm 100% good with property values, okay, but Mr. Gentry also owns ADUs in this town. So given an assessment on ADU, I don't think would be a fair, but I do.
Real estate, I think, is a different animal.
Are there really any ADUs right now? It's not even a legal thing, is it?
No.
We don't have ADUs.
I don't know. I've said my
technical opinion. Legal standpoint. You're right. Correct, but we do have
right. There's dwellings in the back. I know that. But.
We're not buying the non-conforming ADUs. ADUs. Call them what you want, but they're ADUs.
We're faced with a dilemma in the city of Othello. We have a lack of housing. I'm selling my home currently, and I've got to move into a rental. And I'll tell you what, that's a challenge. We chose to move into a rental till we decide where we're going from there. It was a short-term rental, and try to find a short-term rental. It's a huge challenge.
Try to find a long-term rental.
To find a long-term. I've got 4 kids, 2 dogs, a bunny rabbit, 3 cats, and a lizard. And I'm not kidding. It sounds funny. I John Zoo, and the animals are the most tame of them all. So we have a huge problem in this city for people that want to remain in city limits. Now, I can get out of city limits all day long. I'm going to be crying on my way home from the bank, but I can leave. But the people that want to remain in the city for whatever reasons, you can't move to Othello, into Othello. So what are your thoughts? As a real estate professional, the market and the buyers and the sellers that are out there.
Yeah, there's a million thoughts.
First of all,
there's a housing emergency in Othello. And I've said this before to council. It's an emergency. I have people in my office almost daily, almost crying, you know.
That's statewide, though. That's almost countrywide.
But it's also right here.
We don't want to be part of it.
We would like to address it here, I think.
You know what? So here's the deal. Bar none, the number one, or not number one, but one of the big responsibilities of this council is to protect property values and rights in this town. It's to protect the values of the people that are here, not people that want to come here. It's to protect the people that are here. And that's just bar none.
I'm kind of facing, that's one of my big eye openers. I'm kind of facing that dilemma. Right now I move,
I've got to resign from council, and I am not resigning, for the record. But if I move, I've got to resign. I ran for council, and people gave me a vote, and I'd like to at least see my term through. Now, what happens at the end of my term, that's to be decided, but I'm in a pickle right now.
You need a place to live.
I need a place to live. Now, I chose to sell the property. I chose to sell that. I don't have to, but there's underlying circumstances there that drive that. And so that's, I start to feel the problem. And so I started to open my eyes and think, man, what about the people that didn't have a choice? Maybe the landlord sold the property and the new owner wanted to move in and now they can't go find a new rental. I started running through back in my real estate years from 2003 to 2009 when I sold real estate in Alaska, and I started running through that of all the people that used to come through my doors, and that's what put me up on that fence. I can tell you the last meeting I was ready to just say, no, we don't need this in town, and I was, but I got elevated to that apex there, and I need to figure out which side to go down, so I'll let you continue.
I am for safe housing. And if it can be built to code and done right and safe, and there's plenty of parking, which we put into it, we worked on it for 2 years, what we did. And then we've let it rest for a year, and then we kind of reworked it. So yeah, I am for ADUs if they're done right. I'm not for people living in sheds. I'm not for things that are inappropriate or unsafe. And I appreciate what the code enforcement is doing in, you know, checking things. I bought a property that had a dwelling in the back, and Heather and Tim came and checked it. You know, I had to change windows. There were two windows that didn't open big enough in the bedrooms. And so, but I feel like if there's a way that we can do it safely and do it proper and to code and to make it right, and if there's, you know, and not. And I also believe that property values is kind of a case-by-case thing. Mm-hmm. To Angel's point, if the whole neighborhood, maybe, but if there's a few, I mean, for that individual property that has an ADU, I think there's a lot more value to that. People are going to be more excited about that. I think the neighbors actually might want to build an ADU if they have the ability, have the room for it. You know?
So what you're saying is somebody builds an ADU and their neighbors are going to be excited about their neighbor building an ADU. That's what you just said, correct?
Possibly. If it's
how is decent. Somebody's neighbor going to be excited about somebody putting a rental in their backyard?
I don't know. It's case by case. I don't know.
It is case by case.
Corey, you know, I know what you're trying to say, but if you put an ADU and it's going to, you know, be in compliance and it's going to be decent, I don't know. Myself, I don't think in mine, as long as it doesn't look like a, you know, something that was put together with chicken wire. Mm-hmm. Something that's decent, paint it, keep it up, good roofing, something nice. I think it's okay in my.
Then why didn't you let them in Palace Verdes?
What's that?
Then why didn't you allow them?
HOA is totally different animal, Corey. It's totally different. You can't compare it.
It's the same reason a Rolls Royce is, or a Cadillac's built different than the standard GMC. With the different amenities. I get the real estate choices on HOAs. That's not the biggest thing. Where's the majority of our ADUs non-conforming sit now in R2?
That's why you don't see
Councilman Everett's making it.
You don't see them on Catalpa either. Why? Right. For that reason. Because they there's a higher standard that they're trying to keep up. You know, so you don't see that back
there. My
yeah,
point,
but they
man.
Have a covenant too.
Huh?
Yeah.
They what?
They have a covenant too.
Building covenant.
But all you're doing is you're reinforcing my point. So, mm-hmm. Councilman Everett,
am I wrong?
You know what? I don't think we're going to sway you, and
you're
I don't think
sitting
you're going to
there saying
yes, I think we just
that you can't put ADUs in there because it's going to lower the value. Cadillac, GMC.
I'm sure everybody's had their opinion.
You know,
okay, so, all right. Is there any new opinions out here now? I mean, I think I've heard your point a couple times, Corey, and I've heard it go around. So, well, is there any more comment that for the public hearing? Because I'm going to move into where we're going to take some action. We still can deliberate, but
but I think we've received public comment, we've received two planning commissioners have weighed in a number of times, so Chris, you want to weigh in one more time?
We're not living in a bubble, and that's important. ADUs are used throughout the state. And I know in the past, well, we can be unique, but as Councilman Lawless mentioned, our problems aren't unique. They're happening throughout the state. And because of that, a host of different options are being considered. A lot of tools in the toolbox. You guys opened one of those tools when you put together your housing study. And one of the tools that are being used throughout the state is ADUs with really good code and really good control and management. So if you all do decide to do this, this is something very consistent that is being done throughout the state to manage the same problems we're all facing.
Thank you, Chris. Any new points, Council? Okay, I'm going to close the public hearing at 7:55 p.m. And now, I think, for purposes of this accessory dwelling units, this ordinance, and I think I echo Chris Doro when I was completely against him, and I've had my own evolution, and a large part because our community development director continued to say, well, but we have a need here. So she wasn't content to just tell us a need. We hired, or she wrote a grant, and with that, we hired the Burke group, and they did the housing study. I had no idea that that it was as bad, the need in this community was as bad as it was. Also, that we learned some new things about that in the housing study is that we thought that it was all, we needed all single multifamily, and we don't need just multifamily. About 41%, I believe, was a need for single family. So I guess, Mayor has a position too, and my position is I think we need to have an ADU ordinance. And so I think I can simplify this for the council, notwithstanding residential codes that it goes in. You guys have any objections to the other aspects of the way this ordinance is written, as far as setbacks, meeting all the current building and energy codes, et cetera, the size, the height. Do you guys have any objections to it in that regard?
No, I think we covered those two items.
So now it just kind of comes down to where. And that's really the only sticking point. And with Councilman Everett and maybe others, but that's really what we've come down to. Where are we going to allow these? So if anyone wants to make a motion about this ordinance and address the residential units, I'm open to, if you guys want to settle this tonight. If you don't want to settle it tonight, we can come back and have another session, but I think we've covered the ground pretty well, and I think we've gone back and forth. So I think it is time that you at least consider making a decision. But if you're not ready to make that decision, I'm more than happy to bring this up at another meeting.
I'd make the motion to approve the ordinance with the following change, outside the changes we discussed earlier, that the owner occupancy would follow all zones, R2, 3, and 4, and that owner would be on site in those, on those properties, that owner occupancy would follow those, not just R2.
Was there an exemption?
What it just said.
The owner occupancy. R2, and then R3 and 4.
Under 1763020, an ADU that meets the requirements of this chapter may be allowed in R2, R3, R4.
And the 040.
Districts. 040
is where.
But if you look.
So that encompasses all three.
Well, 1763040 addresses just R2 for owner occupancy.
Yeah.
And I'd like to see it R2, R3, and R4 if I was going to move forward. So that would be my motion that's on the table.
Okay. So basically is written there. So all right, is there a second?
Second.
Okay, now I'll open the discussion. Corey, you had a question?
Oh, I was going to say, why don't you just go around and like you did 2 weeks ago, and at that time it was the only sticking point, but.
Okay.
So how about the existing ones that the owner's not there right now? What's going to happen? I know there's some.
Well, right, it's going to be a violation of the ordinance, and our code enforcement's going to have to.
No, you can't
action.
Do that. They're existing. What are you going to do?
No,
they're going to move from a.
Go ahead.
So if it's existing, it's going to fall under that non-conforming provision. This would only apply to something that's created after the date of this ordinance.
Mm-hmm. That's right. It does.
What about ADUs that's being built right now? There's some around town that's being built. What are they going to be?
They don't have a building. They shouldn't be built.
You're right.
Of where some are, then you should report it.
I see ordinance violations on a daily basis.
Report
with my job, I'm not a town tattletale. I'm not a town babysitter. We have a code enforcement and we have a police department for that. I cannot have a direct line to Heather on a daily basis.
The police or the code enforcement find out about things is through citizen reporting.
Okay.
Tell me. Tell me and I'll tell him.
I wanted to justify my reasoning for having the owner occupancy was to support Councilman Everett's concern about R2, and I think owner occupancy might deter the rapid throw up of these dwellings.
Yeah, because they're going to think about it. They're going to say, if I'm going to do good, I want to move, build my own house.
I got to stay here a year.
I have, yeah.
I mean.
Okay.
I just wanted to justify. I wanted to support restrict the zoning to support his removal of R2 without removing R2.
So let me also restate the motion then, just so we're all clear. We have a motion made and seconded to approve this ordinance. We struck item E as the alley annual assessment for alley maintenance. We struck that, and in its place, we replaced it with the height restriction of 20 feet. Then the motion was also made to the applicability in
no.
O2. Yeah, 1763020, the applicability of allowing in R2, 3, and 4.
So my understanding was that wasn't changed. What was changed was section 040.
I'm talking about his motion because that was the only thing that wasn't resolved yet with the council. And so that's why I'm
making. I don't believe there are any changes made to the applicability.
My motion was
statement.
To add R3 and 4 in 17.63.040 owner occupancy. To include R3 and R4 in the owner occupancy clause there.
Okay.
But didn't we replace E with the 20 foot?
Yep. Mm-hmm. And the mayor mentioned that.
Okay. And what was the other thing?
Striking E from it and adding in its place.
Okay. Are we following that then, council?
I'm clear.
Okay. Councilman Garza.
needed to use the restroom. So Councilwoman Quezada, do you have any comment?
No, I'm in favor. There's same discussion we've had. Certain points are very valid that Corey brings up, but the planning commission has worked really hard, and I really believe with the new everything that we will be able to install the new ones, and the older ones just get to come up a little bit at a time. I'm also realistic that it's not going to be as fast as we would like them to, because I do quite a story on a lot of the big 40 ordinance.
Okay,
I'm with Corey, and I think it should be in R1 too, if it's in R2, 3, and 4. And I mean, why not use them?
Okay, well, the motion before us is, as you guys understand, it would include R2 and exclude R1. So all those in favor of the motion signify by saying aye.
Aye.
An opposed?
Nay.
So for the record, we have, is it 5? Angel, you're in favor? Okay.
Was that motion seconded?
Yes.
Okay.
Tanya, who made the motion? John Erickson made the motion. And Gina seconded. Okay. So for the record, Councilman Everett and Councilman Snyder opposed it, but the motion carries. Thank you, everyone, and thank you for the Planning Commission and Ann and staff and City Council. Now I'll move to item 5, which is unfinished business. Do we have any unfinished business tonight? Do we have any new business to come before the council tonight?
Well, Mark and I attended the fire department closing meeting.
Yes.
And I brought it to their attention that we had that the money that...
ARPA.
Okay. Brought it to their attention that if they had anything that they needed or wanted, because that's what that money is being spent on. We talked about the self-breathing apparatuses and stuff that they've been year after year after year putting off. But if there was something we could do for them with that money to get something in front of you, I don't know if you've seen anything yet. It wasn't in their report. You kept taking it out.
I was partially there, yeah. I was there for a few important topics, and
but there's a couple of items that the fire department have been trying to get a you know, funding for through grant monies and stuff like that. And I noticed on the Walla Walla thing that they were giving some of their money to their fire department, and they probably have a city fire department in Walla Walla.
Yeah.
But these guys are our fire department, and anything we can do to help them stay in that grade that they're in right now for
fire protection class 5.
Protection. Mm-hmm. You know, limits the insurance.
Yep.
Liability,
yeah. And I'm not saying buy a new fire truck, but one thing is our oldest ladder truck is one of the oldest ladder trucks that's still being inspected. So that's something we're going to need to start saving money for.
Mm-hmm. When are they saying that that's going to be out and up for a new purchase?
He wasn't
exactly. He didn't really say. He said it's...
He didn't have the... They have that sheet of paper that says when all the trucks go out and that. He didn't have that on him at the time.
And they also brought up numbering of fire hydrants, and then I faded out, and then I came back in, and Councilman Lawless can probably fill us in.
Yeah. There's numerous new fire hydrants that need to be numbered so that they can continue with the inspections. and the logging of those inspections to a number that coincides with the numbering system that's presently.
So a number needs spray painted on them all, or what do you mean?
Yeah. And it's something that, was started a long, long time ago with the numbering system in the city. And it's up to Public Works to get those numbers put in on the fire hydrants. Right now, they're using locations and things like that, and it, they can't input it into the computer.
Because of no number right now, it's just a written log.
They want Public Works to do that, or?
Well, they want.
It's their job.
Yeah, they want someone to do it. I don't think the fire department cares, but I.
So like on a new development or something, like, say, we're working up at Olson Homes, we take out this fire hydrant because it's going to be moved. Well, that takes that number away, and it should be moved. That same number should be moved where that hydrant's moved to.
So do they not have staff that could do that?
It's not their responsibility.
Maintenance of the fire hydrants are, is their responsibility.
No, the inspection and the making sure that they work properly is their they're doing that as a service.
That should be that should we're be paying hand for hand the service. But yeah, that should be really easy to get Terry. Get Terry to get his guys down there.
Maybe the curb yellow to where the fire hydrant, whose responsibility is that? Is that the fire department or is that Public Works?
Well,
Public Works.
Yeah.
So would that fall in our Public Works design standards for numbering of the fire hydrants, Sean? We call out slopes on sidewalks and painting
of curbs. Yeah, I mean, the fire hydrant numbering, I have not heard that topic be brought up, but fire hydrants are only put in for the fire department. I mean, it's their requirements, it's theirs. I mean, in reality, it's their hydrants.
But it's so,
I mean, I guess if there's been a history of us numbering them, but if they're saying they want them numbered for their records,
we don't have a city fire
department. Yeah, I have.
We don't have a city fire department.
It should be nothing to get Terry to get his crew out there and get those fire. I can't see that being an all-day venture to get him to number those fire hydrants. Somebody can get a hold of Terry, or Mayor can get a hold of Terry, or whatever. What's that?
There's a lot of fire hydrants.
Yeah, I can't see it being that big of a venture to get him to number those fire hydrants.
Every 600
feet. I agree. So. But I think for purposes of good record keeping, we should have them numbered so that our fire department, our contracted fire department, is able to log properly and maintain. I don't know if it would take them out of that rating, but at least help them maintain that level.
And it may be something our Public Works is willing to do. Maybe I've dropped the ball because I haven't notified them when a development's accepted.
I think
so. We'll figure out what the past is, what the history is. But I mean, reality, there's not a hydrant put in because Public Works wants them. They're put in for fire protection. In other cities I've worked with, the fire department actually has to pay Public Works to maintain the fire hydrants because fire department doesn't have the personnel that does that, but it's not a Public Works facility. It's a fire department.
That's what we find as a city, or if that's what the administrator finds, it's the proper way, then
should be real easy to find out. You should be able to look at the contract and the maintenance or should be.
I was just going to say that the best way to do this is let's first look at the contract, see what we've contracted them to do. If that's a provision in the contract that's there, I have a feeling that it's left out, that it's probably not stated. So,
I think we'll talk with Public Works.
He puts in fire hydrants, right? Because he's required to. And then within 2 years after the bond and everything is gone, 1 year.
1 year, maybe.
Then the city owns it, right? So the city ends up owning everything that the contractor put in, right? So that includes fire hydrants.
Yes, right? I think we're the owners.
Because they're connected to the city water main. And so let's work hand in hand with the fire department. We have under contract to services for us, and get it done.
And maybe get a commitment from the fire department, then when they're out there doing inspections, flush tests and things like that, that they make known that the hydrants that they're testing need to have a number on them.
Do they flush them all?
They have a record of
throughout the year?
Yeah.
I'm not sure what I'm...
Well, I mean, in new development, so the fire department...
One of the things they can do is just put like a little dog tag, you unscrew it, and then screw it right on there, put a piece of aluminum, so they can do it while they're flushing.
I'll work with the mayor, and we'll look into the process of what's going on.
Thank you. Anything else about that meeting?
What else? Anything more?
They're still having their annual banquet in January? Or did they mention? Okay.
Did they say they were due for their annual inspection for the lady?
Yeah. They are.
No worries after traffic.
No.
Additional new business, I think those calming squares. I think they're doing their job, and I've monitored Facebook, and I'm absolutely surprised that there's not more people in here today, but Facebook seems to be a good forum for that kind of stuff. But unfortunately, it has no bearing on council. But I think they're doing their job. I know me, as I go through those uncontrolled intersections, I'm a nervous wreck. For whatever reason, I'm in that area. I'm a nervous wreck. And those squares are a pain in the neck, and they slow you down. And I feel a lot more comfortable going through that square, knowing that somebody's not going to be coming down at 58 miles an hour on a cross street and T-bone me with a truck full of kids, which I always have.
Or 67 miles an hour.
Yeah, or 67. So I do like them. I do like them.
So yes, we put traffic counters up prior to putting them in, and 11th Avenue was the record holder at 67 going one direction, 64 going the other direction.
67 miles an hour?
Yes.
Was that on 11th or was
that? That was 11th. Okay. Hemlock was second.
I thought it was higher than that on 11th.
You thought it was higher than 67?
Yeah.
No, that was okay. The highest.
I thought it was higher.
Hemlock had 58 going one direction, 56 going the other direction. I think every 11 out of the 12 streets that we tested had at least had one car going over 40. And so.
That's because of those stop signs down 11.
And I believe give you a 45% runway of the cars traveling on 11th were speeding. So. We will hopefully finish putting them in tomorrow, and we've got several thank yous. Something needed to be done. We've got a few, why are you doing this? And we've tried to communicate with the citizens. If they stop and ask a question, I've stopped and talked to them, and a few people, I've gotten one call where, why are you doing this? But I don't think it's a real legitimate call. I mean, I think we'll all talk to her, and she kind of ranted on them. I'm not quite sure if she even knew where her conversation was going. But I think the people in the neighborhoods are appreciative of something being done.
That's absolutely the key goal there, is to calm these neighborhoods down. I can tell you right now, I wish I had more intersections where I live now so we can put them in there, because it's a runway for loud cars that come off of 14th, and they deadhead right into 10th, and then they take a left or a right and have no business in the neighborhood. I want to put pop-up speed bumps to rip the bottom of those flares off all the time. And so if you can encourage these people to come to city council so they could hear the long explanations that you guys go through as a planning commission, as a city engineer, and as the council, as they deliberate these decisions, I think it would be great for the public to know that, rather than to draw their own conclusions on Facebook forums.
We've told them it's been I'm not a real big fan of the Facebook surveys or whatever, but we've explained that this has been a long issue. I mean, the planning commission discussed it for months and months, and then it went, this is a temporary, this is a pilot study. Well, it can be temporary. What we've put in is fairly inexpensive. We put in 16 of them today, plugging along, and that's, you know, doing other things during the day also. We'll have the last ones put in, but they can be taken out if we determine that we don't like them, if they're not effective, if we want to change the design. There's things we can, you know, they're not a permanent fixture, but the hope is that we'll put them in, and hopefully you guys allow them to stay in for a year. We'll take traffic volumes and speeds about the same time next year as we did this year, so we have same weather conditions and all that. And then we'll look at 2022's accident data.
The last comment I had on those, Square was awesome. It stops those guys from drifting around. We watch too much Fast and the Furious, but some of those intersections, I drove them. I had to see what they were all about. Because I wasn't completely on board with them, but I am on board with slowing people down in town. Some of those vehicles are parked really close to the corners. Are we going to paint those corners and keep that parking pushed back away? So I don't have a super long truck, but I do have a dually, and those don't necessarily turn on a dime. So it was a little tight coming when I made the left turn, heading west, made a left turn. So I came out and around, and I got pretty close watching in my mirror to both the vehicle and the squares.
So we've talked with the police department and Public Works about painting the curb, and I think it's 15 feet back. I'm not positive on what the RCWs are, but there's a certain period or distance that you're not supposed to park within corners in the first place. But for the police department to enforce that, those corners will have to be painted. And we've also talked about putting some tabs so that once you do get around and you kind of get back out from driving in the parking lane. But like I said, it's a pilot study. It's a work in progress.
I think the person that should paint them should have the best suntan out of the whole police department.
I don't believe they volunteered on painting them.
Oh, no. I just know somebody's going to Jamaica. I'm a little jealous right now.
Personally, being on the block that received the first two of them, we saw an immediate difference in how people were driving and how fast they were driving on our block, and it's just increased since they've gone on down the road. And
I don't think there'll be any question after looking at the speeds that they will be effective.
Yeah.
The question is, what's the public opinion, and then you know what's the council's priority? Do you want effectiveness, or do you want, you know, a straw vote, or do you want to listen to a few people that are just detractors? But I think as they're in place, you often have a lot of uproar against change. I think they will, hopefully the people who don't live in those neighborhoods aren't using those streets. They either take Juniper or 10th or get over to Scutney or Main or 7th or 14th, the streets that are built for higher volumes.
So a lot of thanks goes out to the Planning Commission, Engineering, and Planning Department for putting up with the awesome. I feel our debates are very fruitful here at council, but for putting up with them and going to the extent of looking for solutions to the problems that we face in Othello. It's a thankless job, and I wanted to send thanks out.
So thank you, Sean. Staff has already begun to put together a public relations campaign, and the chief is going to be featured in a video with the police department about the new traffic circles, as far as what showing people. I mean, just basic stuff. I mean, you'd be surprised how much just basic stuff is helpful to the public, like what happens if you cut. You're taking a left-hand turn, if you cut in front of it, could you get a ticket, or could you, if you're involved in an accident, is that going to be your fault? Some additional information as far as why the city council chose to put them in, what the
what we hope to accomplish with them. And so I think council will be pleased once you see the video come out. And it'll go on Facebook where you have a lot of the comments are being made. And I just think council needs to know that we're also advocating at the staff level to support city council in its decision. So is there any other new business? Okay, I have a couple of things. Council had authorized Talia to apply for the less than lethal grant. Today, this afternoon, we got awarded the less than lethal grant. We were one of 25 cities in the state. And so that is going to be anywhere from $5,000 to $20,000. It just depends on how much money exactly they are going to give away, but in that grant. But I thought that was great news. Police department, I'm sure that makes Chief happy. Again, that was for those air, yeah, the pepper balls. Yeah, rifles. Was it rifles or pistols? Yeah. There's going to be a finance committee meeting this Thursday over the capital budget. So members of the... Excuse me. Sorry. Capital's facility plan. And that is Councilman Everett Erickson and... Snyder. Okay, so that.
Yeah, I'm going to be there.
So Gina's going to be there? Okay.
If I'm the backup.
Okay, so that'll be Thursday here at City Hall at noon. And then, Tanya, this is about the November 1st meeting.
Yes, so we do not have an agenda for November 1st, so
Council
members can go
please.
Yes.
So. We have to make a motion?
Or yeah.
I'll make a motion to cancel the November 1st meeting.
Second.
All those in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? Motion carried. Thank you. We move to item...
Another one?
Excuse me. As we move to item 7, it's the council also received a fire department report and the planning commission minutes. Having no further business, I'll conclude tonight's meeting at 8:27 p.m.
So you got, you're selling your house.
Like all these stuff.
Good. How you going?
Better. That part.
We were that close.
I have. So Jim had an attorney let us and Jim should.
What you want?
With a full exemption outside of the state recommending no requirement.
He came up with the
couple weeks. So you know, Dr. Bosnick is here, they're looking at 2 to 4 weeks out.
Oh, I don't know. Your dad was blowing up my phone.
Yeah, it's our county house. But you need to fire.
No, and for some reason, my sound is on my watch, and it kept making noises. I couldn't get it. And then I thought I turned it off, but I actually...
I've got to call in to Jay Weiss. A guy needs to get on board. The American Association of Pediatricians recommends against vaccination because of it.
That was pretty clever, I thought. Well, I was just, when there was a lot of talking going on, I was just hanging out.
Well, they filled out the exemptions or the accommodations, and they were allowed accommodations. But we have a governor in Washington.
John, you made my assistants hold it. Her and I were the only two advocates for what you presented on the planning commission. We couldn't get. I sent it to all of them.
Well, I can tell you right now, I'm completely on board with promoting R2 from it. However, I'm not solving that problem.
Too much.
I am not 100% for the same buster. You know, I'm the one that had it repealed. Before I was counseling it. However, we have a problem. We don't have any viable solutions on.